Good morning, everyone. We're going to start off with a public hearing and work session on House Bill 4120. Mazen is here to give us a summary.
Mr. Chair, members of committee, the House Bill 4120 deals with almost a perennial issue of the transient lodging tax, and this bill basically, in the essence of it, is try to strengthen enforcement of the tax collection. And it does that through the definition, expansion of what an intermediary is and who could collect that tax being or working as an intermediary for the transient lodging function. So as you'd see it in the second page, it allows for basically the new entities that work online to be those collecting the tax. And you have a couple other authorities for the Department of Revenue to audit and look into the collection, and also allow for the Department of Revenue to collect for the local governments and so on. So this is primarily what you have. I put in your SMS a background on how the tax started since 2003 and the changes that we went through. The intermediary change was done in the 2013 session, and at that time the expectation was that 2013 session definition of the intermediary as a collector included everybody, but it seems like the business models, as they change, slight changes pop up, and this tries to catch up with the technology. And you also have a revenue impact in your materials as well. Because it's an enforcement bill, it's primarily a small increase in the revenue that expected to be collected, but it's a function of enforcement. And of course, remember, the tax is not that huge on the state level. It's about $20 million that we are collecting now at the 1.8% of what the consideration is.
Okay, changing business models. We have Senator DeBoer and Representative Marsh here.
We have Senator Johnson
Mr. Chair,
here too.
I didn't sign in.
I'm sorry.
I weasel up here with them.
Weasel's the right word, Senator.
I didn't sign in.
As if we could stop you.
Okay, Senator Haas, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm Pam Marsh. I'm the state representative for District 5, which is Southern Jackson County. House Bill 4120 is very simply a bill about tax compliance. It's that simple. It updates Oregon statutes governing administration of the local transient occupancy, or also known as lodging tax, which is levied on overnight stays at hotels, motels, bed and breakfasts, and other accommodations. For our cities and counties, the transient lodging tax, or TLT, is a critical source of funding for tourism and general fund purposes. In the old days, say 20 years ago, it was a pretty straightforward procedure to spend the night in another town. You chose a hotel, you checked in on your arrival, you paid when you left. The hotel was responsible for collecting and remitting the tax applied to your stay. But the advent of the internet and online platforms has provided an alternative to the traditional model. Now, instead of dealing directly with an establishment, you can make a reservation via the internet for a stay in a conventional hotel, in a short-term rental, or in a room in someone's house. Your payment may be collected by the online reservation platform, by the host, or even via a third online intermediary. Now, I think we would probably all agree that utilization of online platforms has given more consumers more choice and more flexibility, and that's a very good thing. But I hope we would also agree that taxes should be equitably applied to everyone in the business sector. That's a basic premise of tax policy and the goal of HB 4120. Specifically, the bill makes three changes to current law. First, it specifies that the entity that takes your money for an overnight stay is responsible for collecting and filing the transient occupancy tax. This is a pretty straightforward and fundamental principle and a logical way to sort out the responsibilities when you have sometimes multiple entities involved in a stay. If you accept the money for a taxable service, you should compute and submit applicable tax revenues. Hotels, motels, family inns, and other conventional facilities collect and pay taxes due to the local city or county. So should an entity that collects your money in an online platform. Second, HB 4120 specifies that taxes should be paid on the full amount billed to the consumer. This is standard practice in brick and mortar operations. All the costs that are attributed to your reservation and your stay are part of the service and should be taxed. Third, HB 4120 provides an updated definition of intermediaries, which will apply to both state and local transient lodging tax collections. Finally, I just want to make a quick word about process. HB 4120 reflects the results of work group discussions that were held in 2017. Unfortunately, last year we simply ran out of time to act on the legislation, so we brought it back this year to try to complete the job. HB 4120 is a common sense update to the TLT that will create a level playing field among lodging providers and ensure that local governments receive the desperately needed revenue that is owed to them. I ask for your aye vote and welcome any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and fellow senators. I'm Senator Alan DeBoer from District 3. I'm here in support of House Bill 4120 and the representative from my district. We need for the people that collect the rentals to collect the tax. It's a big problem, I think, in every city and counties that may do that, is that for the city to try to determine who's paying the tax and to collect the tax, it just doesn't work. So I think it makes common sense if you're collecting the rental fee for the place, you collect the tax. You'll probably hear from some of the internet providers that this is very difficult for them to do. But I have to say, if Uber can deliver a car in front of me in less than 3 or 4 minutes and a license plate number, that their technology is there. So I think it'd be a great assistance to follow that. If you collect the rent, you collect the tax. And I also don't understand, they have one of the companies has a master agreement, which I've read, and they claim that they can't tell you who paid the tax, and I disagree with that completely. If you're collecting the sales tax or collecting any kind of tax on behalf of a third party, the municipality needs to know where it came from, maybe just by the address, because the proliferation we have of rentals by bed and breakfasts and specific houses, it's becoming a nightmare for both neighborhoods and for the cities to figure out who's paying and not paying. So I strongly support the bill and thank Representative Marsh for bringing it forward.
Good morning, committee. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I represent Senate District 16, that is a large part of the coast. And one of the commonalities that you'll see among the three of us is that we represent places where people love to go. Ashland, Southern Oregon, and for me, the coast. I'm actually, Representative Marsh did a wonderful job of explaining the bill. I'm just going to add testimony from the finance officer of one of my coastal cities. Rockaway Beach depends strongly on the tourism tax dollars, and HB 421 is sure to give us a revenue boost. However, our support for House Bill 4120 is not just about the revenue. It's about tax fairness. All vacation rentals use costly city services, but not all rentals contribute to those services. I believe House Bill 4120 will help level the playing field and benefit all the small coastal communities in Oregon. Sadly, the icy road conditions will prevent me from attending the hearing tomorrow, but I do hope that you will be there backing House Bill 4120. Job accomplished. This is signed Marnie Johnston, Finance Officer for the City of Rockaway Beach. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Boquist.
Thank you. First, senators and representatives, it's going to move out today, so okay, don't get nervous here when I start asking questions. But I'm trying to sort of figure a couple of things out here. I mean, tax compliance is not as easy as people think it is. If it was, we'd be collecting, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars over at DOR, and we wouldn't have wasted probably $40 million on the cigarette tax enforcement that DOR and Justice Department couldn't figure out how to go collect. So tax compliance, really complex. Tax fairness is even stranger, because most of the individuals that we're trying to go out and collect are small businesses. And, of course, we have a diverse standard between small businesses and corporations. We've seen that in this building. And so we don't all agree that equity is in the reality here. So let's just get rid of all that stuff. So let me boil down to a question for you folks in the bill, because you, especially representing Marsh, I mean, you're kind of the big proponent here. And actually I agree with everything you said, so it's not, I'm just kind of looking for clarity here. This starts, and probably, as you said, if it had been passed in the full session, probably would have still started on July 1st. The only concern I sort of have here is, or do have, though it's going to leave this committee regardless of my concerns, is when we have one of these cities and counties, some of the hundred some that aren't in being collected now that need to be collected, and the computerization, I mean, DOR, and all I have to do is pick DMV. There's one that Senator DeBoer knows. We know DMV can't seem to figure out what they're doing, and after last night, I'm even more puzzled. Right, Senator Johnson?
Yes, sir.
I mean, we had a 100-year-old problem, and magically they just figured out people were stealing license plates yesterday. It's like, good God almighty. No wonder your computer system doesn't work at DMV. But that's my point right here, my question for Representative Marsh. Because I've looked at the bill, and I don't see some of the claims opponents have in this. What happens when one of these cities or counties that's down low on the list, and these entities don't get their computer reprogrammed by July 1st, 2018, does this bill provide the full employment for lawyers for them to start suing, or is there some sort of mechanism, or how do you envision this computerization working if, you know, the programmers miss Rockaway Beach, which now in the testimony I think they should make sure Rockaway Beach is high on the list.
Thank you,
sir. But that's what I'm looking at. Is there a right of action created suddenly if they miss this by 2 or 3 weeks or a month?
There's no right of action noted in the bill.
So follow up. So how do you, I mean, we sort of envision, we're hoping that these internet providers will make this deadline, and mm-hmm. if some of them don't, of course, they're going to owe the back taxes regardless, because we have this deadline here. I mean, is that sort of how you see it, or we're just hopeful they make it, and if they don't make the deadline, at least the way I read it, maybe LRO, they're going to have to make sure that whatever by that deadline, if their computer doesn't catch up, they're still going to owe that back tax?
I would presume that that would be the way that it would interpret it, but I defer to others on that question. We didn't receive any testimony regarding the deadline from any of the online providers or their inability to make that deadline. I think we've been talking about this for a year, so and we know that they do collect for some cities, so I think it's a matter of just programming in a couple of lines into their algorithms, and there we go.
Mr. Chair.
May I? Yes, Chair. So I've heard that so many times from users, and it's only a couple of lines of code, and it's not really true. It's not a couple of lines of code. It never is. I've been a programmer for many, many years, and I hear that from users every day when I was doing it, and it's just not the case. It's much more complicated than a couple of lines of code.
If I can add on.
May I ask to be excused? I'm due an LFO. Thank you.
Good.
Thanks. Thank you.
Please close and leave by Friday.
So Senator asks, Senator Boquist, it still is the responsibility of the homeowner to remit the tax. This is more of a convenience for them, so I don't think that responsibility changes. So it's up to the cities to figure out enforcement. I think this cuts a lot of work out from the city, the homeowner that rents their house, and puts that responsibility on the person that's actually renting the house and collecting the tax.
Mr. Chair, the way I think I read it, and it must be probably not the final reading, but if it's due in July 1st, 2018, the tax usually is paid on quarterly basis, so you won't have something due until September.
Okay.
Because that, so you, that is that collection.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
And thank you both for testifying. I appreciate it.
Wendy Johnson and Dan Eisenbeiss. We do have a number of people signed up, so if you could confine your remarks to the highlights, that would be most tell. Appreciated.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Wendy Johnson here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. The League strongly supports the bill. You have a lot of testimony online from the House side and again some more on from the Senate side. The Metro Mayors Association supported the bill. You have testimony from Eugene, Gresham, Wilsonville, Cannon Beach, Depot Bay, Rockaway Beach, all over the state. I think you heard great testimony before me on why it's important. Just a couple of additional points. In 2013, the legislature came up with the word intermediary and intended to cover entities like Expedia and Priceline and those types because they were renting out for hotels. And now we have a similar type of entity, the VRBOs, the Airbnbs that are renting out for homes. And so we're cleaning up that definition to make it consistent to cover all. So that's a highlight. In 2017, just last session, the legislature passed House Bill 2400. That bill allows the Department of Revenue to collect the local lodging tax on behalf of a county or city if they elect to do that. It's just like the same statute that was in that bill is what was used by cities and counties for the local marijuana tax to be collected by the Department of Revenue. Most of the cities chose in the last year or so to have that tax collected by DOR and for DOR to handle enforcement. We anticipate the same thing will happen with the lodging tax, that many of our jurisdictions will turn it over for efficiency purposes, but we need the law to be in sync and covering the same to both the state and the local governments. We've been in litigation with a number of online companies. They are paying the state, but they're not paying our local governments because the law isn't clear. So it's a chicken egg thing. I know some of the opponents would like us to have DOR do collection and do statewide collection. We're getting closer to that, but we can not mandate that. Many of our cities, especially the larger ones that collect millions in tourism, want to keep that in-house. And the opponents have said that they understand that as well. So we've done what we can on that front to deal with DOR collection. And I anticipate that many agreements will happen in the next year. But this we need this bill to make those agreements possible. And it shouldn't be a mandate. We agree that it will be more efficient to do so. I think those are my highlights. You have voluntary agreements examples online, as well as statistics and what our forms look like. This is not a difficult tax to administer. You count the number of nights, what you collected, what the charges were, and then you take it times the local tax rate. The forms look pretty similar. Some of our jurisdictions do quarterly and some are monthly, and that will cause a bit of an extra burden. But this is a tax that is a local tax, that it's a choice. And if you're going to do business in those communities, we believe you need to figure out the local tax. But going back to your previous question, Senator Boquist, it would be up to the local jurisdiction to figure out what the penalties are if they didn't pay on time. It's an administrative burden now, and it's a lot of it's an honor system because it is difficult to enforce. Most communities don't have the ability to actually take collection actions, and so it's another reason why we expect many of our cities will eventually turn it over to the Department of Revenue to handle. That I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Dan.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, Dan Eisenbeist with the City of Portland, here to speak in support of House Bill 4120. As you've heard from other witnesses, this bill fundamentally establishes a fair and level playing field in the transient lodging industry and ensures that transient lodging tax is properly collected and remitted for all bookings, and that the transient lodging tax is applied to the total consideration charged. Transient lodging tax revenue both supports travel promotion as well as vital local services, including public safety and parks, for instance. I know you have many other witnesses signed up, so I will end my remarks there and happy to address any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions of the cities. All right. Thank you both. Dan Jarman, representing Airbnb. I don't know if it's just you, Dan, or you have a team.
Rose.
Welcome.
Good Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dan Jarman, representing Airbnb. Thank you for allowing Airbnb to provide testimony on House Bill 4120. Airbnb is an online marketplace that allows people to list, discover, and book unique accommodations around the world, whether a spare bedroom, an apartment, a cabin, or even a castle. Airbnb facilitates these home sharing and transactions in 191 countries and more than 65,000 cities worldwide. Airbnb is committed to helping our community pay its fair share of local transient lodging tax. This is why we began voluntarily collecting and remitting transient lodging taxes on behalf of our community in the city of Portland in 2014, the very first agreement of its kind in the company's history. Since then, we have reached similar agreements with more than 340 jurisdictions throughout the world, including more than 20 here in Oregon. These jurisdictions include Multnomah County, Washington County, Lane County, Tillamook County, Klamath County, Beaverton, Hillsborough, Bend, Newport, Lincoln City, Eugene, and Springfield, just to name a few. And we continue working to reach similar agreements with other jurisdictions. Since 2014, Airbnb has collected and remitted more than $20 million in local transient lodging taxes to Oregon local jurisdictions. We also have been collecting and remitting the statewide transient lodging tax, as you know, now at 1.8% for all of our Oregon hosts since 2014. Again, transient lodging tax is important, and we support a statewide transient lodging tax system. However, there is a more sensible and efficient way to accomplish this than what is proposed in this bill. Collectively, we should be pursuing a statewide transient lodging tax system through the Department of Revenue as authorized by the legislature in 2016. In essence, this is happening what's happening today with our marijuana program. In fact, there's 95 cities that have marijuana taxes, and 72 of those are collected through DOR, including communities such as Beaverton and Hillsborough, Portland, Bend, and Ashland. We committed to legislators last session that we would work collaboratively on a solution to find a workable transient lodging tax collection system. Not long after the gavel went down, we contacted DOR about the feasibility of a new statewide collection system with remittance back to cities and counties. The feedback was there's interest in working with us, but they had to first implement three taxes that were part of your transportation bill that you passed last session. We agreed to revisit the conversation after this short session. While we are surprised to see this legislation reemerge this short session, we recognize the importance of transient lodging taxes to the communities around the state. We ask this committee to consider the following amendments to improve the bill and make the implementation successful for cities, counties, hosts, and short-term rental platforms. First, move the implementation date to the next fiscal year, beginning July 1, 2019. This will allow all the affected platforms enough time to review each of the 113 local and county transient lodge tax rules, rates, forms, auditing processes, and filing deadlines, as well as allow all the platforms that are now going to be required to do this to update their software and inform their users. I think Senator Riley was right. This is a more complicated process than folks realize. In fact, this is a massive undertaking for platforms that serve customers worldwide, many of whom don't even know about this legislation happening now. And remember, this implementation date is probably less than 4 months away. Second, we would hope that we could create a more efficient transient lodging tax system. And we would like to look at ways to incentivize local governments to enter into intergovernment agreements with DOR for transient lodging tax collection. Tourism-rich states like Utah and Arizona have set up similar systems for all their providers, including hotels. And finally, we would like to encourage local governments to develop model transient lodging tax code to establish this uniformity, as been recommended by the League of Cities previously. As staff said, it's just not a matter of when you file. It's a whole host of other requirements as it relates to transient lodging tax, all different in the 113 jurisdictions that have taxes. With this lack of uniformity, each Oregon city and county can continue to impose new regulations or requirements on tourism and lodging industries with a patchwork of laws. This kind of uncertainty is unworkable for all types of lodging providers who bring valuable tourism dollars to our economy. We say this again today. We want to work with lawmakers and stakeholders on a comprehensive policy. We've done this in other states and believe this can be true for Oregon. Other states have recognized that companies in the sharing economy space can be partners with government. We should be working on modern policies rather than apply old systems to new business models. Let me finish by saying the Technology Association of Oregon and TechNet share these views that we're discussing today. They cannot be here this morning to testify, but have submitted written comments for the record. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer your questions.
Good morning. My name is Rose Feliciano. I'm with the Internet Association. IA represents more than 40 of the world's leading Internet companies and advances public policy solutions that foster innovation, promote economic growth, and empower people through the free and open Internet. Short-term rentals are an example of the Internet-enabled innovation increases quality and choice while decreasing costs. It must be allowed to compete in a and grow in an open market. IA does oppose HB 4120, and it is not because we object to the collection or paying a tax. I believe Dan very well spelled out the concerns that the association has. We are concerned with the timeline. July 1st is right around the corner, and it has been noted that it's not simply just adding a couple of little sentences in code. I'm not a coder. I'm assuming it's very difficult. The companies have reached out to the Department of Revenue about figuring out something that works. And I think that is what's most important. If you're going to have a tax, you should be able to make sure that it's being collected appropriately, timely, and correctly. And if you rush, you end up with a situation where things get messed up. People make mistakes. You miss something. And it's something that I think that if you take a little bit of time and you do it right, it's much better. And it's in terms of not just making sure that you're collecting the appropriate taxes, but also in making sure that the relationships with the companies and the hosts and the local jurisdictions is in good order. And our hosts, our companies are working with thousands and thousands of jurisdictions across the world, not just in the state, but even in the state, it's a lot. And we just have to recognize that if we take time to do it right, it will be better than having it not done correctly and making it a big mess. So thank you.
Thank you. I just want to make sure that everybody's clear that we didn't just start working on this issue. I mean, mm-hmm. I think Representative Marsh will testify that this has been an ongoing discussion, mm-hmm. predating last session.
Yes.
Dan, did you, those amendments that you noted, did you request those amendments in the House?
We did not. It was very much at the last minute that the Revenue Committee chose to move on the bill. We were not asked to sit down with the sponsors of the legislation, the proponents, to talk about amendments. So we were not allowed that opportunity to do it on the House.
Did you request any over here when the bill came over?
I've been talking to your staff about this, and
well, I mean, I don't see any amendments on OLIS or anything, so I just want to make sure.
Well, beginning on Friday, I started talking to your staff about the need for amendments, and I was waiting to hear back about approval to have some drafted. So, and I haven't gotten any feedback from your office about that.
Okay. Questions, Senator Boquist?
Well, I don't think they're going to make the deadline, and we need to have a unified system. But just to be blunt, 52-8 on the far side, and the votes really exist on this side. So waiting till tomorrow isn't going to help us. And I don't think the amendments will make it out of the committee anyway, so we might as well just do it.
Question.
Comment. I did work for Jet Propulsion Lab in Pasadena, and I was in charge of the payroll system. We had employees all over the world, and we didn't have the luxury of not doing the updates for laws that are passed. Mm-hmm. It's true you can't do it in a couple of lines of code, but you still have to do it.
And I would say that, again, we're not objecting to doing it. Mm-hmm. I think that we just want to make sure that when we do it right.
I absolutely agree with that. And and I think that you will do it right.
And Mr. Chair and Senator Riley, thank you for that comment. And, again, we recognize this bill is going to pass. Mm-hmm. There's no question about that. And we're not quarreling with that. All we're asking this committee is to take a step back, spend the next day or so talking about what is a realistic timeline. We've highlighted some of the issues that need to be addressed by all of these platforms. Again, it's just not our platform. There are others that are not following this legislation that are offering short-term rentals in the state of Oregon. There's 113 jurisdictions here, four pages, with their different laws. You know, we have, unlike hotels are fairly fixed. We have hosts in all of these communities throughout the state, coming on the platform, going off the platform. We need to understand where the boundaries are, where the city boundaries are, where the county boundaries are, where those hosts are within those boundaries to accommodate that, as well as the second part of the requirement, which is to understand all of the laws of timing, filing deadlines, auditing rates that different throughout those times of year. And again, this is just a massive undertaking that 4 months is not realistic for anyone to be able to do. So we understand the bill is going to pass. What we're asking for is for you to spend the next day or so with us to figure out what is the right timeline for implementation. And so we can have something that goes to the governor that is realistic and can meet everyone's objectives. So thank you.
Thank you. Bill Perry, Nikki Tersey.
Thanks. Chair Haas, members of the committee, Nikki Terziev here on behalf of the Oregon Destination Marketing Organizations, ODMO. You have some written testimony from us on the record. We represent the Convention and Visitor Bureaus, the Chambers of Commerce, the folks that are responsible for bringing tourism dollars into the localities all across the state. Since the TIP, the Tourism Investment Program, was instituted in 2003, visitor spending in Oregon has nearly doubled. And we're supportive of this need to statutorily clarify who will be impacted by this, the examination of intermediaries, and we urge your support for this bill.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, Bill Perry with the Oregon Restaurant Lodging Association. And I'll start off by, I'm going to try and address both the concerns by Senator Boquist and Riley. I'm a C average liberal arts major, so I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a coder. I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm an expert at either. But if you look at the bill on page 2, line 35 through 36, is existing statute. It's been existing statute since 2003 when we passed it. And it basically says transient lodging includes houses, cabins, condominiums, apartment units, other dwelling units, or portion of these dwelling units. So to your point, legally, I think they're liable to the tax now. So we could sue them today, and they'd have to pay it, in my opinion. I don't have a law degree. I do think what this bill does is it clarifies from here on future. So they could almost say you're relieving the liability from July 1 and only increasing liability after July 1. So, to me, the whole collection part of it is they've made a conscious decision in this marketplace to try to negotiate their local taxes over the last 3 to 6 years, not pay them. So they made a choice, and they have that right. They can do that. Now, to the coding, I don't think the coding is simple. I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's easy, but I don't know how many coders they have. They could probably bring all their coders to the state and fix it. they probably got thousands of them. But once again, everybody in this marketplace, whether they're an online platform or a hotel everybody has these systems that exist in the marketplace in Oregon now. And sure, they talk about hotels are fixed, but hotels change brands, which means if you go from Best Western to Holiday Holiday Inn, you have to alter your coding, you have to move it. Travelocity could sell one room in each hotel. I mean, there's all these different systems available that have been adjusting to the system in Oregon. This is not a new concept. Everybody in this internet playing field is playing under the existing rules. They're collecting the taxes. So I'm not going to sit here and say it's easy, but the technology exists. They have chosen not to abide by it in the past. So at some point, there's going to be a deadline, and they're going to have to meet it. And second, staff brought it up, is remember, collection of the tax, they're not going to be remitting the tax on July 1. And in essence, depending on where you're at, you generally have 30 to 60 days to collect the tax or to collect all the tax in your system. And then you have 30 days after that date to send it on to the jurisdictions where they go. So you have at least a 60-day window before any of that tax needs to be remitted to the government. And so there are different timelines that have to be met. But like I said, everybody in this playing field has been abiding by these rules. I say there's a liability now. And so they have chosen to take in a different path, and I don't fault them for it. But at some point, that hammer's going to drop. And these amendments have not been offered. We've talked about them. We've talked about them for a year. You know, we've talked about them for a long time. There has been no proposals put on OLIS. So at some point, we just got to move forward. And so I support the bill as written, and I would appreciate your support also.
Questions? Okay. Thank you both.
Are we in a work session?
We are in a work session. Senator Bertschinger.
We have the Department of Revenue here. Could we have them come up and maybe answer a couple questions?
Deanna Mack, you open for some questions?
Not that she has any choice.
Yeah.
That,
good thing she's really smart.
Senator Bertschinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where is this in your department? You want to enlighten me now that I'm thoroughly confused of who collects what and who's on first and who's on second?
So Chair Haas and Senator Bartsugar, for the record, Deanna Mack, Department of Revenue. And we administer the state lodging tax in our special programs area. We've been administering it for several years. We're working with this. This bill actually provide some clarity on who is supposed to remit the tax to us. I guess I don't really understand your question.
How do you audit this? How do you know people are doing this?
How do we audit this? I apologize, but I would have to ask someone in program that question. I wasn't prepared to answer that today.
Thank you.
I can follow up though.
Senator Buckley.
This is not a question on the bill, okay?
Okay.
So. Don't worry about that. In the future, does DOR, because I mean, both sides have all said, I mean, we are in the 21st century. OLIS is sort of a red herring, so let's just forget about that. But in the future, do you see, does DOR have the capacity to do a statewide collection of this and then distribute it? So we would have, in theory, in the future, in the 22nd century, because it'll take us 100 years after we learned from DMV yesterday, is that in 100 years from now, could we, in theory, through DOR, be able to do a uniform statewide collection system?
Mr. Chair and Senator Boquist, yes, we're doing that now for the marijuana program. Mm-hmm. What we do with the marijuana program is we have interagency agreements with the local governments. Mm-hmm. But in order for that to work, the local governments have to have ordinances that are in line with the state's laws, and that would be including penalties and interests and that kind of thing. So the local governments have some work to do to get to that point in time, but we certainly can do that, yes.
And follow up just for everybody.
And so today, and I think the answer to the question, or the real question I think Senator Bertschinger was asking, is really at DOR, even auditing and so on and so forth, even if you find there's an error, it's not your job to go out and do it. You just tell the city that there's, the city really is the city or county who's ever doing this, other than the state tax, is really the enforcement arm. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Boquist, for the local lodging tax, that's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dion. Appreciate that. Funny how marijuana has caused everybody to up their game.
Actually, it was 1528, but I'm still prepared to make a motion.
Okay, Senator Boquist.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4120A to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 4120A to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Just for the record, Mr. Chair, I mean, I, I think I agree with both sides completely, and this isn't going away, so we're going to see it next session.
I would concur with that, and I know that there could always be some more tweaks to these bills, but I also know that we're in the fourth week of this short session.
No, Mr. Chair, I want to correct you. We are in the, I think, something like the 27th day of the 27th month of the fourth year of this short session.
Not even going to begin to. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bearsugar.
Yes.
Senator Riley.
Aye.
Senator Taylor.
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist.
Yeah.
Chair Haas.
Haas votes aye. The measure passes. Unless someone up here would like to carry this bill, I'll have Alan DeBoer carry it.
There's no takers up here.
Okay. Senator DeBoer will be the carrier.
I'll work on my
list. We'll close out the work session and public hearing and go to another meaty issue here and open up work session public hearing on House Bill 4162.
So there's three ayes and two ayes.
You thought you had to come down here to
vote. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4162 extends the sunset of long-term care assessment for another 6 years. The current assessment is set to sunset on June 30, 2020, so it's another 6 years. So we have fiscal statement that basically says we need this money. We have revenue impact statement for 1921. Since the assessment expires at the end of 2020 fiscal year 2021, we anticipate about a little over $70 million. And 21-23, about $150 million or so. Currently, the assessment is about $60 million a year. It fetches about 110 federal matching dollars. And we have two experts. This bill actually didn't go through policy committee, so I asked two experts to educate us a little bit. We have Mr. Jim Carlson and Mr. McCormick from DHS.
Okay, gentlemen, want to come up?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jim Carlson. I'm the president of the Oregon Healthcare Association. We're a statewide trade association, represents about 750 licensed long-term care providers across the state. House Bill 4162 extends the current long-term care provider assessment. This is an assessment that went into effect originally in 2003, and it's been extended twice before in 2007 and last time in 2013. It's pretty straightforward in how it works. All licensed nursing facilities in the state file audited cost reports each year with the state. The state looks at what those revenues are total in the aggregate. They come up with a calculation based on federal law and what you're allowed to do under provider tax assessment programs. They establish what the assessment rate will be in the aggregate and divide that up by the number of projected patient days in the coming year. There's a federal cap of 6%, and so Oregon, under the provider long-term care provider assessment, goes right to that 6%. That money comes in. It's appropriated for Medicaid-funded nursing facility services. It's matched with the federal dollars, and then it's used to help pay for and support services for low-income elderly and disabled individuals who rely on Medicaid to help pay for the cost of the care they need. It's had strong bipartisan support each of the three previous times it's been before the legislature. We haven't had a lot of controversy. It's provided very stable, predictable funding for a kind of core safety net program since its inception. And we urge you to extend it an additional 6 years to allow this program to continue to move forward and help provide needed financing for valuable services for Oregonians. So thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike McCormick. I'm the Deputy Director for the Aging and People with Disabilities Program within the Department of Human Services. Because our program doesn't come before your committee, just a quick highlight of what our program does. We provide long-term services and supports to eligible older adults and people with disabilities. The settings include nursing facilities, assisted living facilities, adult foster home, memory care communities, and nursing facilities. Nursing facility provider taxes are allowable under federal regulations, and as Mr. Carlson stated, the revenue is limited to 6% of total revenue across the entire provider class. We have a really strong record of tax compliance with this, and we collect faithfully. It's very predictable, the revenue that comes in. And all of the revenue that comes in directly offsets general fund need for nursing facility services in our publicly funded long-term care programs. So what this bill does is there is absolutely no revenue impact in this biennium. As Day stated, the tax is scheduled to sunset June 30, 2020. So extending this for another 6 years will generate approximately $72 million in revenue next biennium that will directly offset any general fund need. The bill establishes the reimbursement rate for nursing facilities at the 62nd percentile. This is status quo conditions that does not have a fiscal impact to the agency. So since 2003, a little statistic is we have collected $700 million in revenue from this provider group, and it's leveraged over $1.2 billion in federal funds. So the department appreciates the collaboration that took place between the legislative branch, the executive branch, and the Oregon Healthcare Association in drafting this bill, and I'm available to answer any questions you may have.
I have a couple questions. What is the federal match?
Currently, the federal chair has currently the federal match is approximately 63%. So every dollar that's spent, the state contributes 37 cents and the federal government contributes 63 cents, okay. Approximately. Okay. It varies from quarter to quarter on a very complicated federal formula.
I'm sure I'm missing something here, but the reason the 2019-21 revenues are $72 million and 21-23 are 156 is because?
Mr. Chair, the second year of the biennium is where the revenue is coming from. Right now, under the current law, if we were not to pass this, we would continue to bring the revenue in for first year biennium. Extending this will guarantee that revenue for the entire biennium, which is why we're asking for this action to be taken now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for clarity's sake, the last page has some rate changes on it, but I'm assuming that's just sort of this change in terms of making sure everything's balanced with the federal law. I mean, there are some specific rate increases in the last page of the bill, and I'm just assuming that those assessments are trying to bring us in compliance to make sure we're at the Ouija board level the feds want us.
Mr. Chair, Senator Boquist, basically this bill will continue status quo forward, current law forward. What's referenced there in Section 5 was in the original printed version of the bill. LC deleted a provision of a program that's supposed to continue through 2020, and they deleted that, so it was going to go away 2 years later. The amendments in the House brought that back in to continue that through 2020. And the way the rates are set every year is every nursing facility in the state files a detailed Medicaid cost report. It shows their revenues, their expenses. Mr. McCormick's agency has an audit department that reviews and audits those, and then they establish the rates at the 62nd percentile of those costs. And so it creates an incentive for providers to deliver their costs at or below that level, but you will have providers who Medicaid does not cover the entire cost of the care. This continues that current rate-setting formula forward. And one of the things that at the outset when this was first enacted back in 2003 that was very important to the provider community is every penny of the assessment and the associated federal match by law has to go back into funding these services. So there's no potential that you can generate money from this assessment and use it to fund other programs. And so that's been a very important provision, and these sections in the law continue that forward.
No further questions, and no one else signed up to testify. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
We are in a work session, Senator Boquist.
Chair, move House Bill 4162A to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Boquist moves House Bill 4162A to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bearsugar.
Yes.
Senator Riley?
Aye.
Senator Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist?
Yes.
Chair Hass?
Hass votes aye.
I just want to know, Mr. Chair, before we do this, I was going to tell you it was a yes vote as long as I don't carry it, but I will carry the bill.
Senator Boquist will carry the bill. I'll close the work session and the public hearing. Stay tuned, committee. Wrapping things up this week, we will adjourn.